This is Chapter Day. I'm Jim Fleming. I'm reading again from Little Hawk and the Lone Wolf, a memoir by Raymond Cacatosh, published by the Wisconsin State Historical Society Press. Born in 1924 on the Menominee Indian Reservation near Neopit, Wisconsin, Raymond grew up surrounded by nature and the traditions of his tribe. But then his father died and there wasn't enough money, so he was sent to the Indian boarding school near Kashina to learn about the world in a different way. Chapter 4. After Easter break, the little nun was still keeping an eye on me. I tried to whisper to Jim that I was sorry about the big fight we'd had, but the nun yelled out, "Raymond, stop talking. See me after class." "Now you're really going to get it," said Jim. After all the boys left, I sat in my seat and waited for the nun's book to hit me on the head. Instead, she motioned me to come up to her desk. She asked me why I was talking in class. I told her I'd wanted to apologize to Jim, and she said, "You could do that after class." "But," I explained, "I promised the Mother Superior I would do it as soon as I saw him again." "When did you see the Mother Superior?" "Yesterday. She took me to church."
"Explain to me why the Mother Superior took you to church."
"Well, everyone left for Easter vacation, and I was alone, so Mr. Shea took me to the hospital for all of last week."
"Don't you have a home?"
"Yes, but my mother couldn't pick me up."
"When did you last see your mother?"
"Last Christmas."
"You mean to tell me that no one has come to visit you all this time?"
"That's right. Well, my father died. My mother couldn't support us because we have no money."
"Where will you go when school closes?"
"Mother Superior told me to come back to the hospital when vacation starts."
"What else did she tell you?"
"She told me not to fight anymore, and to explain to you that I was really sick when I stuck out my tongue that day."
"Is that all?"
"No. I promised the man on the cross that I would not smoke and that I'll try to be good from now on." She slowly turned toward the blackboard and didn't say anything. After a while, I got impatient. Then she turned around, but didn't look up at me. She simply reached under her habit for her handkerchief. With her head down, I thought she was falling asleep because she made no effort to speak to me. Finally, she spoke. "You can go now." As I was about to leave, she added, "I promise to never hit you again with a book in this class."
"Thank you, sister. The Mother Superior was right."
"About what?"
"She said to ask the man up there on the cross for forgiveness, and everything would be all right."
After I stood there in front of her for a moment, she asked me if there was anything else I wanted to know. There was just one more thing.
"Sister, why do women always cry?"
"Because they are women." The rest of the semester seemed to pass as quickly as the week I'd spent at the hospital. Soon, everyone seemed to be talking about the annual end-of-the-year picnic to be held at one of the lakes near Kashina. I wondered if I'd have to stay at the hospital all summer. Better pray to the man up there for more help, I told myself. The night before the picnic, we could hardly get to sleep as we wondered what to expect once we got to the lake. We'd been told about games, boat rides, and swimming, and we daydreamed about the food and prizes. But the picnic meant it was the end of the school year, and I was worried about where I'd be placed. Would I go back to the hospital, or would I go somewhere else? Some boys were sent to orphanages off the reservation. The next day, two stake-bed trucks pulled up at the dorm before noon, and we piled into them so fast Mr. Shea didn't even get a chance to get seated in the cab. Once he took his seat, I swear, the truck sank about 2 feet. When we arrived at the lake, we hit the beach like a bunch of Marines, and the fun began. Someone threw a football, and I ran and caught it. Bad move. I was hit from the side and landed on my ass about 10 feet away. As I stood up, some guy caught another pass and ran toward me. I was hit so hard he knocked me over. All three of us were on the ground. That did it. No more football for me. Volleyball, here I come. We punched that ball back and forth over the net so many times I was getting tired. Then some big kid who was running tripped me and hit me so hard I thought I'd gotten hit by Mr. Shea. Enough of that. I decided to go on a boat ride. Just as I was about to climb into the boat, someone hollered, "Swimming, everyone!" But there was one big problem. None of us had swimming suits. "Just use your birthday suits," said Mr. Shea. I asked him what a birthday suit was. "Go Bear!"
Jim replied, before Mr. Shea could tell me anything further. "Well, that I could do, because at home I had no swimming suit, and we'd all go bare." We continued swimming until some dirty dog showed up who had had his mother drive him to the picnic, along with his sisters. Someone shouted, "Girls!" When we saw them coming, we dashed for our clothes, not caring whose clothes we grabbed. I wound up with a pair of pants that would have fit Mr. Shea. Scratched and bruised, we made it back to the picnic area. The tables were loaded with sandwiches, hot dogs, potato salad, cake, and ice cream. To us, this was fit for a king. All we had to do was say a prayer, and then we could start eating. Well, some kids ate too much, got sick. Not Raymond. I remembered what my mother always said. Eat just enough to get full and save a little room for ice cream. The feast went on until about 4 o'clock, and then Mr. Shea told us, "Start getting ready to go back to the dorm. Your parents will be picking you up." I had dreaded this moment. At the tender age of 8 and a half, I was already a lone wolf, ostracized from my family because my older brothers wouldn't help my mother support us. Then I thought of the good mother and how nicely she'd treated me. I thought about all the nurses and even the little nun. Maybe Bobby was still at the hospital. I hope not. No one would know how lonesome I was that day, but I never did cry. Sometimes tears would form, and I would quickly run to the washroom to throw some cold water on my face. Then I would look up to Father Sky and say, "Forgive me, Father, for being so weak." This was the time to show that I was a real Indian, not some weakling. Nevertheless, it was hard to comprehend my deplorable situation. Back at the school, Mr. Shea sat down beside me on the dormitory steps. He asked, "How would you like to spend the summer with me and my family?" I smiled and replied, "I have a little sister at home who depends on me, and I know she'll be upset if I don't come home this summer." I hoped he'd understand. He nodded and smiled. Soon, everyone was gone, and I knew no one was going to pick me up, so I walked into Mr. Shea's office and asked him to take me back to the hospital. He told me to get my things together and wait on the steps. As I waited, I looked toward the main gate and saw a 1929 Model A Ford slowly approaching. It stopped right in front of me. The door opened, and out rushed my eldest sister, Mary. With tears running down her face, she threw her arms around me and kissed me on the cheek. Mary resembled the movie star Ava Gardner, but was much more beautiful. "Why didn't you come back to visit him?" Mr. Shea asked her. "Well, we were so broke we barely made a living," Mary answered. "It's been almost 6 months." "I know," sighed Mary. "I just got a job, and this is my first payday. Now he won't ever be coming back here." Mary took me by the hand, and a man got out of the driver's side of the car. He introduced himself as Melvin. "I'm going to help your family get back on their feet," he assured me. "And I'm going to marry your sister Cecilia." After meeting Melvin, I turned to take one last look at the mountain of a man who had taken care of me the past semester. I thanked him for being so kind, and for all the consideration he showed me during the winter and spring. He reached down for my hand and shook it. I think I noticed a little moisture forming in his eyes. But that's all right. White men are allowed to cry. As we were leaving, I waved to him until we got out of the gate and out of sight. Mr. Shea just stood there and kept waving. "We shall meet again. It's only a matter of time," I said to myself. "May the Great Spirit smile on him from time to time." It was the last time I saw him. After we passed the main gate, I asked Melvin if he would stop at the hospital. On the way there, I couldn't help noticing the nice interior of Mel's car. The seats folded forward, and it had a stick shift on the floor. Melvin noticed me checking it out and asked me how I liked it. "Fine," I answered. "How much?" He told me, $30. "Oh, it's kind of high for a Model A." "Yeah, but it has all new tires and a good engine." "How many miles to the gallon?" I asked him. 20. "How fast will it go?" 50. "Wide open." Mary wanted to know why I wanted to go to the hospital. "Are you sick?" she asked. I told her that I wanted to thank the Mother Superior for taking care of me during Easter vacation. As I walked up the steps at the hospital entrance, Mary caught up with me and asked if she could come along. She seemed very eager to meet the Mother Superior. When we entered, the good mother walked toward us and hollered, "Raymond!" I ran into her wide-open arms, and she gave me a big hug. Next, she took a look at my sister and asked, "And who is this young lady?" "That's my sister Mary," I answered. "Hi," Mary said, smiling at the Mother Superior. "Ray mentioned you were very nice to him, so I just had to meet you and thank you for being so kind." "Oh, he was no bother," the good mother said. "In fact, he helped us many times." "Will he be staying with us again?" "No. I'm taking him home, and he won't be coming back this fall. I have a job now." What my sister told the Mother Superior next surprised me. She said she wanted to become a nun. The good mother told her to finish high school first and then go and talk to the priest in Neapit. After our visit, we headed back out the entrance door, and I turned to wave goodbye to the Mother Superior. She waved, and I thought I saw her reach for her handkerchief. "That's okay," I thought. "All mothers cry." Soon we were homeward bound. The Model A purred along at about 40 miles per hour. I felt like I'd just gotten out of prison. This lone wolf has got to be free. No walls to confine me. I looked forward to being among the pines near the Wolf River again. Melvin must have sensed my eagerness. "We'll be there in a little while," he promised. Yet it seemed to take hours. Finally, we pulled into our driveway. It was the happiest moment of my young life. I opened the door, and my little sister was there to meet me. We grabbed each other's arms and jumped around and around. "Welcome home," my mother said, once we stopped jumping. My mother then began to tell me how tough they'd had it. At times they had no food, and they almost froze to death. I wondered why my brothers didn't provide wood for the stove. Then I realized they must have been too lazy to cut the wood. "You could have written me about all this," I complained. I noticed that my mother was having difficulty answering my questions, and I stopped myself before I could ask any more. I figured it was about time I think of the future and try to forget the past. Catherine motioned for me to come into the kitchen. She asked, "How about a sandwich?" To my surprise, the kitchen was packed. There were sweet rolls, cookies, store bread, and some lunch meat in the cooler. Mary said she'd had a job, but she hadn't told me where. Later I found out that it was at the general store in town. The Great Spirit had smiled on us, and I made an offering to him for being so kind. The next time Melvin said he was going into town, I asked if I could go with him. Mary was working at the store, and she was glad to see us. She smiled and asked what we would like. I ordered a candy bar, Cracker Jacks, and an ice cream cone. This all came to 15 cents. She said I shouldn't worry about the cost. So I surprised her by handing her a dollar bill. "Where did you get this?" she gasped. "From Mr. Shea," I replied. I bought my little sister the same items I'd chosen for myself. Mary warned me, "Don't tell your brothers or they'll be asking you for cigarettes." Once we were back home, my mother thought Mary had bought the candy for us. I told my little sister about our secret bank, all 70 cents of it, and she promised not to say a word about it. Besides, I still had another dollar left. We were rich. After we ate our candy, my little sister and I headed for the river. We threw stones into the water, and then we got bored and decided to go to the frog pond. When we got there, Catherine screamed and pointed at the ground near her feet. There in the grass was a very large pine snake. It moved toward us. I pushed my sister away from it and told her to get something to hit it with, but she was too scared to move. I found a stick and went back to look for it, but by then it was gone. The snake must have been looking for frogs, and we just happened to be there at the same time. I remember what my mother always said, "Never kill anything unless you want to eat it." Fried snake was not my favorite snack. The encounter with the snake proved too much for my sister, so we went back home to play checkers and draw pictures. We hoped our brothers would stay away from us. Catherine seemed uneasy whenever they were around. Then I was told to go out and chop some wood, and our playtime was cut short. This meant I had to go spy out some dead tree, chop it up, and haul it back home. When I got back, Melvin came out and helped me. He asked me why my brothers didn't come out to help. "'Cause they're too lazy,' I told him. He asked nothing more. My mother was fixing dough for bread, and she told me to make a fire in the kitchen stove. She was also busy making dough for peanut butter cookies. How about that? I lucked out again. Melvin said he was going to pick up Mary and wanted to know if Catherine and I wanted to ride along. We jumped into the car. When we got to the store, we looked around to see what we could buy. Didn't take long before I found some comic books. Flash Gordon, that was the one for me. My sister found a little Orphan Annie book and some coloring books. What a life. The south wind was here, and that meant summer had arrived. The mayflowers and lilies were back in the bosom of Mother Earth. The flowers are born. They grow to maturity, wilt, wane, dry up, and die. We can only try to comprehend the lessons they attempt to teach us. What makes mankind any different from the flowers? We are here for a little while, and then gone forever. Now that school had ended and summer had begun, it was time for me to appreciate the endless wonders of the cosmos. It was time to walk among the pines, smell the fresh air, and enjoy being free. No one appreciates the outdoors more than an Indian, at least this Indian. When I don't see the trees for a long while, I get lonesome. On my walk, I first visited the frog pond to see if I could catch a turtle. No luck. So I headed for the pine ridge to see if I could chase a few chipmunks. But those suckers are unfriendly. The leaves seemed to beckon to me as they swayed with the breeze. The carpet of green made walking easy on this summer day, so I took off my shoes and felt the soft grass beneath my feet. Then I looked up at the blue and thanked Father Sky for this pleasant summer day. The ducks were back. I heard their quacks, and a loon, somewhere, calling for its mate. The swallows at the sandpit proved interesting, and the red-winged blackbirds along the riverbank had nests by now, maybe even some little ones. With all this summer activity, it was hard to decide where to go and what fun to have, but as I walked away from the frog pond, I saw a few butterflies fluttering around a puddle. The butterflies reminded me of trout, because once I had seen a trout jump out of the water and catch one. Seeing butterflies made me want to go trout fishing. My favorite fishing hole was about 2 miles away. To get there, I had to walk along Highway 47 to Camp Four Hill, then turn left and walk along a trail to a dam. Just before the dam, there were springs bubbling up from the ground. It was the best water I've ever tasted. When I arrived at my fishing hole, I sat on a rock and listened to the rushing water, leaned back and looked up at the clear blue sky. I decided fishing could wait. I would just lie back and observe the wonders of nature. Made me feel happy to be alive. Everything seemed to be new. Everything, that is, except me. This would be my 10th summer. The north wind had bowed to the south wind, permitting her to come and warm our hearts after the long cold winter. This is the time of year my mother would make an offering to the Great Spirit for giving us another nice summer. Eventually, I started fishing. I caught 2 trout, but the fish seemed to stop biting, so I decided to head for home. Remembering the Indian way, I would go back with just enough fish to eat. 2 trout were enough for me and my little sister. When I started to leave, I noticed something I had never seen before. Bear droppings. I knew I'd better get going fast. Bear like fish, and if I encountered one, I'd have to throw my trout at her. Most animals give birth to their young in the spring, and spring is when the animal mothers get mean. This includes bears and wolves, too. All summer I wouldn't go back to my favorite fishing hole for fear of that old bear. She might invite me to dinner and have me as her main dish. I wished I had a dog to help me. My mother took the trout I'd brought home and began to prepare them for my first trout dinner since last year. "Don't go too far away. Supper will be ready in a few moments," she called to me as I headed back outside. Walking among the huge pines, I looked up to see their crests bending with the wind, as if they were welcoming me back. These trees were there long before I was born. They're still there today, and I know they will be there long after I'm gone. Next time you're near a pine tree, remember this. It's a living thing, just like you and me. The tree needs water and nutrients to live, and has Old Father Sky to pray to every day. Take a good look at a tree and see its limbs. They're pointed upwards, as if in prayer. When you're feeling lonely, get up close to a pine tree, sit in its shade, look up at Father Sky, and be grateful you are alive. Soon you'll realize that you're only here for a little while, and that the tree you're sitting next to will be there long after you've gone. I watched the birds fluttering near the tops of the trees, and they seemed to be in a hurry to go somewhere. Then I noticed dark clouds forming, and the next big gust of wind sent me heading for home. Summer is the time the trees get washed, and Mother Earth makes everything fresh again. The rain does many things to the soil as well, and without it our garden would not produce so many delectable plants that nourish our bodies. What would we do without rain? Yet when the rain comes down for too long, we hope it stops. Remember the Indian way. Hope for just enough, not too much. That summer of 1934 seemed to be passing quickly. Soon my mother started talking about going to Sturgeon Bay, a city located north of Green Bay. When I asked why we were going there, my mother told me, "It's cherry-picking time." Cherry-picking time was an annual event lasting about 2 weeks in July. The people who owned the farms in the area would send out trucks to transport workers back and forth from the cherry orchards. When the trucks arrived in our town, we were ready. Off we'd go, headed for Sturgeon Bay. When we passed Green Bay, I spotted the biggest body of water I'd ever seen. My mother told me it was Green Bay, adding, "They call the bay that because it appears to be green." Huh, that made sense to me. Once we got to Sturgeon Bay, I wondered what a sturgeon looked like, because Sturgeon Bay must have gotten its name from the fish. Years later, I found out that once there had indeed been a lot of sturgeons in those waters. When we reached the cherry orchards, we could see the trees were loaded with fruit, and when we passed under one, we would grab a handful. The owners of the orchard had living quarters set up for us, and all we had to do was put clean sheets on the beds. My mother had brought along blankets and clothing for us. We were given cards to be punched every time we turned in a full bucket of cherries. We earned 3 cents a bucket. At the end of the day, I had 10 holes punched into my card and was given 30 cents, all in nickels. Hey, I was rich again. Then there was more good news. Near the barn, a collie had given birth to puppies. Remembering about mothers and their offspring, I asked the owner of the farm if the mother collie was friendly. "Sure," he said. "Just call her Queenie, and pet her first." Well, before I attempted to make friends with Queenie, I ran back to the living area and found some food scraps. When I walked up to Queenie, she wagged her tail, and then I knew she was friendly. I gave her the tidbits, and henceforth she always wagged her tail when she saw me coming. One day the owner noticed this and said, "She really likes you. She must know I would like to have one of her pups." Well, about a week later, while I was playing with the pups, the farmer told me that he was going to sell them. I pointed to a little male puppy that I liked, and I got lucky again. "It's yours," the farmer said. I ran to tell my mother I had a puppy to take home with us. She gave me a serious look and said, "Ray, that dog will never survive the cold winter. Only wolves can survive in 30 below temperatures." She was right. Why do mothers always have to be right? But good news was coming my way again. A truck was going into town for the movies. I wanted to take my little sister to her first movie. She was excited and could hardly wait for the truck. I hoped that this time the movie would not be the Marx Brothers. The movie cost 5 cents, and it was another 5 cents for popcorn and a bottle of Coke. The popcorn was in a paper bag, and when they poured butter on top of it, some of it soaked right through the paper. The Coke came in a small bottle with a straw. Candy bars were 5 cents, and some of them were frozen. The theaters back in those days always featured a double movie. The first we saw was about airplanes, and the other one was a gangster movie with James Cagney. Every time a gun was fired, my little sister would jump. She liked the airplane movie much better. When the movies were over, we were eager to tell our mother all the exciting news, but she'd never been to a movie in her entire life and wasn't all that interested in hearing about them. The cherry harvests lasted only about 2 weeks, and I was not looking forward to going back home. The whole family was sorry to leave our living quarters, and already we looked forward to the next cherry season. While we were packing, my mother told me, "The potato harvest is next, remember. Maybe we'd be able to make more money." I asked my mother one last time if I could have the puppy. I told her that I would keep him inside when it got cold. She put a hand on my shoulder and said, "Ray, a dog's place is outside. Besides, when it starts to shed its fur, we'd have hair all over the house." She was right again. That night, I dreamed of a wolf. When I told my mother about the dream, she just smiled and said, "Oh, you have wolves on your mind. No wonder. There was a wolf howling last night." The news startled me. Some Indians believe that when a person dies, he returns as a wolf. Little Hawk and the Lone Wolf, a memoir by Raymond C. Cacatosh, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. I'm Jim Fleming. I hope you're enjoying the book and that you'll be here again for Chapter Day.